Well, it's not that important.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's November 19th, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 149.
This is No Agenda.
The proud recipient of a dubious Dutch award, coming to you from the Minimum Security Containment Cell Crackpot Command Center in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California. I'm Adam Curry.
And from still sunny northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill.
In the morning. In the morning, John.
Hey.
In the morning to you.
Seems like the morning to me. The sun's blasting through the window, blinding me.
And we're on, actually, we're not, well, we tried to go early, and now we're on time.
We're actually 10-15 minutes early.
No, more like half an hour earlier than normal. Normally,
you're right, because we're always 15 minutes late.
Yeah. It's funny, so I finally get you on Skype, you're like, hey, man, I gotta call you back. I gotta talk to a guy. Do you know what that sounded like? It sounded like you're just setting up a hit. I gotta call you back. I gotta talk to a guy.
It's
a guy that I gotta talk to.
So the hot news this week, of course, you probably haven't been following it.
No, wait a minute. I have hot news before you even get anywhere. I have the hottest news of all hot news to share with you.
All right, what?
I'm putting it on Skype right now. I want you to see this link. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to, officially, according to Esquire magazine, the worst dressed man in Holland.
You?
Yes. And I want you to take a look at this website.
I'm looking at it.
Because right below me is the best dressed guy.
That guy?
Yeah.
No, you have to put this in the show notes, because of this guy looks like, is that his hair?
That's his hair. But look at what he's wearing.
Yeah, he's wearing like a, he's the, how are you the worst dressed? I mean.
Well, listen, this is how it works. Esquire magazine is, of course, an irrelevant piece of shit that no one reads. Magazines in general are in trouble. And so they're like, how do we get some publicity? Oh, I know. Let's do something outrageous, like nominate Adam Curry for worst dressed man and then let him win it.
So the thing is, that's interesting, is that a picture of you, you actually look better
pretty
than
good.
You do.
Yeah, I look better than normal, don't I?
You look better than normal, and you actually look quite good, and you look like you're exchanging dirty ribald tales or something with this woman.
I am.
And meanwhile, this other guy looks like a slouch.
Mm.
Who is he?
He's the lead singer of some, no, lead guitarist of some Dutch rock band. But the point is, you were talking about this just the other day on the show, where you said, you know, this is how these lists are put together. You have lunch for an hour and you talk some crap about, you know, we'll make him. No, I'll trade you him for him. And it's fun to watch how a magazine will actually take a public story and use that to publicize their own magazine. And by the way, no one in the Netherlands is actually saying this. No one has caught on that maybe they did this just to get publicity for their magazine. Except I think that this newspaper, Algemeen Dagblad, I think the two pictures they placed underneath each other is kind of their way of saying, wink, wink, we get the joke. We understand.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you're right.
But of course,
the website I'm looking at is not the Esquire site. It's a Sonora
site. Right, right. So, but of course, if they would actually give me the award, like a plaque, I mean, that would be nice, you know, something to put on my
mantle. That would be cool. They won't give you anything.
No, they won't give me anything. If they did, I would thank them very much. And of course, I would have to say that the worst dressed title comes from the first half of the year when I was still with my ex-wife. So.
Yeah, just keep the publicity thing boiling.
Keep it rolling, baby. Keep it going.
So you're telling me, I think our studio audience should know that what's the latest in Holland about you? And
no, that's not important.
No, I think it is.
No, I don't think it's important.
Now they're going to wonder. Whoa,
I don't
what?
Give a shit. Go learn Dutch and go read. All I want is I want an official award. I want a plaque. You see, the guy who won, he got a Best Dressed Award. It would be great to have a worst dressed award plaque. Don't you think? I think that's bullshit. You use my name to publicize your crappy ass magazine, which no one apparently cares about. Why don't you give, at least you could do is give me the official plaque.
Flowers
maybe? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or a shirt.
You know, if you hound them, they might just go buy one of these plaques and give it to you. I think you just get them at these. I mean, you can go give yourself an award.
Just go buy one. Don't realize one made
up. And I know there's a lot of CEOs that do this and a lot of other phony balonies. Oh, yeah. You go into their office. I'm always suspicious when I go in somebody's office that's just like an office and they have their diploma on the wall. What's the point? I mean, anyway, you can get these things made anywhere.
Yeah.
And so they got their diploma. Then they have a bunch of pictures of them shaking hands with various famous people.
Photoshop. I got one of those. I have one with me and Putin that someone made for me, and it looks real. And I had it on my wall for the longest time. And so many people said, wow, is that you and Putin? Yeah, you know, I was down at the ranch. We were hanging out with George W.
So yeah, you can surround yourself with this. But the other thing you can do if you want to really go to the next level beyond Photoshop is you go to one of these trophy stores.
Yeah.
You go in, they're all over the place, and they got all kinds of cool trophies. They're actually kind of interesting to go into anyway, because you can look at these crazy trophies, and then you can just buy yourself, you know, take one of the trophies, say, I'd like to get a sample.
Yeah.
You know, cause you try to get
where else do you think people buy the trophies?
Yeah, they buy them at these places and say, okay, here's what I need put on here. And then you put some bogus award with your name. And then you give them the $50 or $20 or whatever trophy.
Well, you can get a really nice one for maybe $100.
Oh, yeah, you get knockout.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want one of those ones that looks like glass, you know, the glass ones that are kind of.
No, Lucite.
Lucite is cool. Lucite's crack. But anyway, you get any one of these things, and then you get a bunch of them, actually. You get five or six of them. Man of the year, sportsman of the year, golfer of the year, you know, or humanitarian award.
Now that I think about it, you know, maybe Uncle Don did that. I was looking in his study, all that stuff, man. I'm thinking maybe he went to the shop and bought those.
It's easy to do. You can load up. You could be very impressive. What you get is one of the big offices, and you get a fake Iranian rug.
The best is when you see one of these guys who's actually got a small office and has all of this stuff all over the place. Then you know it's really bogus. It's like, sure, dude. You've got all these awards.
The fact of the matter is most people who actually do win a lot of awards
don't, you know, brag
and there are people
it.
Like that. They all give them to their mom. Mm-hmm. If you go to their mom's house, then you can see
they've
got
all the awards. That's absolutely true.
I have to say, people will put an Emmy up there if they have one.
I would.
Those are hard. I don't think you can go get a copy of.
No.
I'll bet you if you shopped around enough, you'd find an Emmy or an Oscar in some pawn shop somewhere.
Yeah, you just have to put a different name on it, but sure. I bet you
can
find
easy
that.
Yeah,
some technical award or something. You know, that should be possible.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you gave me this DVD to watch of the Rachel Maddow show. Do we need to talk about that?
No, not necessarily. I just thought it was interesting. Because the thing going on right now that needs to be discussed, even though I know you're going to cringe.
No, because you said I had to find the elephant in the room.
Yeah. Did you find it?
Well, I saw three elephants.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah, there's obviously three elephants.
Go ahead. What's the thing that needs to be discussed?
Well, Sarah Palin's on the rampage.
No, she's on her book. She had book promotional tour. That's what she's on.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yes.
And so now it's like she's all the talk of the town, although I think this one's going to, this time it's got to fade for good.
May I say, by the way, that on behalf of the No Agenda audience, I shall read her book. It was actually sold out. I wanted to get a copy. I even looked on Amazon, and of course, it's not available on Amazon.
I think
yet.
Walmart has it.
Yeah, so I'll pick up a copy. It's funny. My whole family, up in Armonk, you know, they, of course, there's a lot, you know, we're all talking politics because let's face it, that's what we do. And it's like, oh, have you? Sarah Palin's book comes up, and everyone's like guffawing, like, I don't think I'll put that on my list. I'm not gonna read that. I'm like, wow, you know, for someone who came so close to actually perhaps being vice president, the first female vice president, you know, why would you not be interested in reading what's in the book? And these are intelligent people, you know, it's just part of that whole meme of, oh no, she's ridiculous. And even if she is ridiculous, it's still interesting to read the book. Is it going to kill you? I'm sure it's big type, you know, double spaced. It's not going to be hard to get through. So it's like, geez, you know, and then form your own opinion of the book instead of listening to a bunch of talking heads like Rachel Maddow or Sean Hannity, who had her on last night.
Yeah, I missed that. I saw enough of her. I mean, I saw her do the Oprah show. I saw her on
Good Morning America. I missed all that.
Yeah, I know you did. And you purposely did, because I asked if you wanted a DVD of any of this stuff, and no.
I said I wanted you to surprise me so I could come in with a fresh view.
Okay, well, you're going to have one then, because you didn't see any of it. Now, here's, I mean, the only interview, or, because I also heard part of the Rush Limbaugh interview, which was just the worst. He's not really an interviewer. And I'm sure Hannity's was a softball
You're right. Forget about it. Yes, major league softball hand job. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're all colluding with each other. You know, Hannity's like, we've got this Holocaust denier Ahmadinejad who wants to wipe Israel off the face of the map. That's when I click the TV off. You know, it's like, okay, there's two things that are, if not out of context, certainly not direct translations from the Farsi language that Sean Hannity doesn't speak. You know, it's like, I'm done already. And then Sarah Palin to actually answer that? No. Screw me. Screw that.
So anyway, but I have to say the 1 hour long Oprah Winfrey interview was quite good. And Oprah is a great interviewer.
Yeah, she's very, very personable, of course.
And she doesn't, she brings out a lot of stuff without going after the person. She has a lot of interesting techniques. But anyway, she drew Sarah out and, you know, almost brought her to tears in some funny way, which is another trick she has. But then the next day, Barbara Walters, who obviously hates the woman, interviewed her, and then of course ABC, which I already slammed Palin once before in an interview by creative editing.
Right.
It was just, you could just tell that Walters hated her, and it was just as one of these, you know, I hate you, and here's an interview, and she tried to be nice.
I hate you. No, answer my questions, damn it.
So I do have a clip you should play, which as soon as it's played, I had to go back and look at the interview because for some reason I missed this obviosity. Mm-hmm. This is the one that says Palin, I think.
Frank Luntz is with us. Good to see you.
It's a pleasure. You know, I'm looking at that clip and it annoys me. ABC cut as close as they could to her. The face, that's a trick that 60 Minutes discovered. The closer that they get to you, the more likely people are to distrust you, the closer the shot. And they know that. And so they cut in on her to actually make her look less effective, less articulate. And it's really not fair in an interview.
Well, so why would that not be?
So I went back. Oh, yeah, and they did. And it was funny because you have the small pin-headed Barbara Walters on one side, and she's cut normal. She's, you know,
has like a 5,000 Dernier pantyhose in front of the lens for her and Vaseline.
And then they cut to Palin, and it's like you can't see the top of her head or the bottom of her
chin. It's just her eyes and her mouth, right?
It just zoomed in on her. They cut it back once in a while, but for the most part.
It's time once again, and let me just put it in the show notes here. I will link to the Zen TV experiment. I think we've talked about this previously on the show, John. This is a great little test. You can do it home. You can do it tonight. It's a series of things you're supposed to do with your television, and it teaches you the trickery that is television. It's quite good. And I'll just leave it at that. I've harped on this for at least 5 or 6 years.
Right. So then Palin goes off and does whatever she does. And of course the Walters thing was just crappy, but it was at 7 a.m. on the Good Morning America show. And who watches that anyway?
In the morning.
But anyway, the one thing that was interesting was this Rachel Maddow situation.
So just paraphrase what I saw?
Sure.
Okay, so it's Rachel Maddow reviewing the book, essentially, and she, I guess they got a hold of Sarah Wallace, who...
Nicole
Wallace, who is apparently slammed in the book for essentially colluding with the press, which I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, you get a kind of behind the scenes feel of how these campaigns are run, where everybody's buddies, and what Sarah Palin is saying, excuse me, is that Katie Couric, you know, no one trusted her at the time. She needed kind of like an a personal interview, walking along, but then it was supposed to be in front of the UN to give kind of a political, worldly feel to it. So it was all completely orchestrated, according to Sarah Palin. And then Nicole Wallace refutes that. And then they bring on this other lesbian from Air America. And I was just like, double-barreled lesbian trouble on my TV set. I was like, I just wanted to like fold the two of them together. Like, they're a cute little couple. It's like salt and pepper. It was bizarre, to say the least.
It was very bizarre. And it, by the way, this is available.
Nothing against lesbians. I'm just pointing out.
No, lesbians are great. It's just that when they're colluding.
Lesbians are great. Hey, John, let's just point out, lesbians are great, particularly when they're kissing
when they're
and we can watch.
Against the men, it's a problem.
Or colluding against hot-looking straight women. That's also kind of cool.
Well, and this is the point, is because they kept bringing up this point that apparently Palin didn't, according to Nicole Wallace, who here's the backstory for people out there, and they just want to kind of deconstruct this a little bit. McCain told all his staffers that when this book comes out, they're not supposed to talk to the media,
right?
Especially not to go on TV. So Maddow brought this up, and she says Nicole Wallace contacted us, and Nicole Wallace was a target in the book, and she was one of McCain's top girls, and she contacted them, and they did an interview of her, but they didn't air it because of this agreement not to do any TV. So they just took quotes from the interview. And first thing I'm thinking is, why is Nicole Wallace going to Rachel Maddow? I mean, this is a little offbeat because it's a Democrat group. I mean, it's a liberals. It's not conservatives. I mean, why is she going there? Right. So then they bring up this other woman, this pixie-ish looking redhead that came on, the one you called the other lesbian.
Oh, please. Oh, please, John.
Okay. She's an extreme lesbian.
Okay.
So I looked at, I just did a little background on this. She had done a puff piece, this woman, it was a writer. She had done a puff piece on Nicole Wallace in The Beast.
Ah, there it comes.
The Daily Beast. A long puff piece.
How wonderful, like, she is, and she's so awesome.
It was a blow job in the strictest sense of the word, in the journalistic sense of the word, not in the any real sense. No. And so I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. And then meanwhile, I'm doing some more digging, trying to look at Nicole Wallace and check her out, because she's obviously friends with these two women for whatever reason. I don't notice that she's a lesbian. At least she's not overtly one, that's for sure.
She's a cute one. She's kind of like a Marissa Meyer lesbian.
She's very cute.
Yeah.
But then I was digging around, and there she is being interviewed by Katie Couric and another puff piece, another blow job.
But this is the way it works. If you want to get to a presidential candidate, the first thing you've got to do is make nice with all the people who control the candidate. And by the way, it's control. And, you know, the best way to do that is to stroke their ego by doing a nice puff piece. That's the smartest way to get to someone. Done deal.
So there's the whole thing is a little messy. And so so the giveaway, though, which indicates to me that there is something amiss, was Nicole Wallace's lament, which was repeated as a quote and then repeated again when Maddow was talking to her friend, which is that as soon as Sarah met Nicole, she hated her. And I thought that was, well, here we have a very religious woman, or, you know, basically a very conservative Midwestern style personality in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, not cosmopolitan in any way. No. And she runs into a cosmopolitan little
girl. It's a clash. Like, it's a clash.
Immediately. Of course, nobody did anything about fixing that problem. And so the whole thing went down the tubes. And I would believe the Sarah Palin side of the story more than I didn't do anything. This is bogus.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this book, and I'm sure I'll have it done by Sunday. I'll see if I can get it. You said Walgreens has it?
Walmart.
We don't have a Walmart in San Francisco.
Oh, probably the only city in the world.
Do we have a Walmart here?
The book will be, it's just going to be everywhere. I mean, it's sold out, but it's just, you know, I'm sure they're backing up the trucks to the presses.
I did read a different book in my travels last week to Chicago and New York. I read End the Fed by Ron Paul.
Oh, yeah.
And I recommend this book. It's a very, very quick read, and it's very small. It's smaller than a Kindle. You can hide it wherever you want. You can almost put it in your back pocket. It's fun, by the way, to go through TSA airport security with this book. I literally had it out of the bag and put it right on top of my stuff to see if I could entice anyone. See,
I have on the blog, Dvorak.org/blog, for anyone who doesn't know that, a link to the story about how the Ron Paul aide who was taken aside from.
Yeah.
I have the link to the conversation, which I think we've linked to before.
We've played it on the show, actually. We played the audio that he taped. And,
Great.
Well, what's interesting about this, so let me just finish first. And the Fed, it's a great Christmas gift. I'll put an Amazon link in the show notes. And I really like it because I was telling my Uncle Don, you know, he was like, well, because I'm going off. I'm going like, well, you know, it's the bankers and it's the Federal Reserve. And so he says, a very smart guy, he says, okay, you've identified the villains. Who are the heroes? And I say, one of them would be Ron Paul. And he starts guffawing. That lunatic from Texas. I said, oh, Uncle Don, that's really cool. This is exactly the way you're supposed to respond. Very, very good. You've been mind controlled. And then we get into this conversation, and I wish I had read the book before I had this conversation with him, because he's like, well, you know, the Federal Reserve, blah, blah, blah. You know, Paul Volcker is a really good friend of mine. I like him very much. And in the book, Ron Paul actually says that he is a good friend of Paul Volcker as well, who, of course, was, wasn't he a Fed chairman for a while in the 70s?
Yeah, he was before the other
Greenspan,
guy.
Before Greenspan.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to send this to Uncle Don because he has to read that, and particularly now that, you know, that we know there's a connection between Dr. Ron and Uncle Don with Paul Volcker. But it's very simple to understand.
1 degree separation.
1 degree of separation, ladies and gentlemen. And I highly recommend it. So anyway, the TSA story, what's interesting about this of course is the Campaign for Liberty volunteer who had $4,700 in a strong box that he put through the X-ray machine on his way back from an event. And he immediately was pulled aside, and they're like, you know, you've got to be dealing drugs, and his campaign. Are you leaving, darling? Give me a kiss. I love you. Mm-hmm. See you later. Going to the gym? Okay. Sorry.
Hey, we're doing a show.
Yeah. It's all right, man. She's busy. And so the guy gets, you know, interrogated and, you know, and real thuggery. So anyway, so the Civil Liberties, was ACLU sued the TSA, and now they've kind of settled where the TSA says, okay, we've changed our internal guidelines, which, by the way, we're not going to give you a copy of our guidelines. You'll have to put in a Freedom of Information request in order to get it. They are total jackasses. And what someone points out well in the article that I'll put in the show notes is that, of course, they don't actually want you to know this, to know that the only thing they're allowed to do is be on the lookout for anything that could put airline or air aviation security in danger. They want you to think that they're some kind of Uber cops, because that, you know, makes you more nervous and makes you more subservient.
Oh, I think it's because they all want to be cops and they don't have the qualifications.
Well, they got the badges.
Yeah.
They finally got them some badges.
I got a badge.
Yeah. Remember the guy was crying when they handed out badges?
Yeah.
No, you don't remember.
Shut up. Paul Blart, I think, was his name.
So anyway, yeah.
Somebody will get that.
I had a thought, by the way, while we're talking about books. You know Lou Dobbs? He quit recently, right?
They fired him, yeah.
He says he quit,
but everybody, there's a lot of controversy. Yeah. They think he got run out of town by a bunch of by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
So he says he was leaving to seek new ways to advocate his opinions, and all of a sudden it hit me. Of course, this is the first one to disappear. Next is going to be all captains of industry who will suddenly quit, leave their factories, leave their businesses.
And they will all
be off somewhere in Gulch.
Gulch,
yes. Once again, I've got a plug for Atlas Shrugged in there. Lou Dobbs is the first to go Gulch.
Lou Dobbs.
That's my story, and I'm
Lou
sticking
Dobbs
to it.
Lou Dobbs has been in and out of the company. Every time he'll quit CNN, and then they'll put somebody else in. The last time they put in some woman who was sleeping with one of the producers I can't remember her name. But anyway, she...
David Letterman?
She sunk the show, basically. I haven't seen her since, which was years ago. And so they begged him to come back and gave him more money. And I think it's going to be another round of that, because that show is basically Lou Dobbs' spot. I mean, it's, you know, it's what he does. Yeah. I'm not, I listen to him. I don't think he's completely off the wall.
He's got a lot of, in fact, he says a lot of really good things. Someone pointed out to me a very long blog post on Bill Maher's blog. And of course, that will also be in the show notes. And it's about the flu vaccine for swine flu. And this is not the swine flu minute, by the way. I know you're already humming the tune, those of you listening to the show, because it's something that just gets in your ear and you can't get out.
Come on, play it.
No. And so he's basically, it's like he's listening to No Agenda. And he's going off and he almost goes as far as to say, you know, the government's out to kill you. So he gets pretty damn close. And I'm like, wow, I love this. I love the, of course he wrote it on his blog, but it might get some traction. I really like it because here you can see a fellow citizen of Gitmo Nation actually starting to awaken. And I tried to post a comment. I was going to say, hey man, if you approached climate change with the same attitude, and maybe, you know, you didn't take the science as absolute fact like Al Gore tells us, and maybe if you look at some alternative theories which don't get any media attention, the exact same story that you're asserting here with swine flu vaccinations and swine flu in general, maybe you'd change your attitude there. And this is very difficult for this guy because his whole audience is all about being an Obama bot and following the order and you know, the stuff that we always talk about. And I think it's beautiful to watch. Anyway, of course, if you want to do that, then it's like Blogger or something. Then it says, give us your Google address and password to post your comment. I'm like, yeah, what kind of bullshit is that? What is that all about?
There's a box below that says you could post anonymously. I'm sure it's still there. You didn't see it.
I hit the box, and it still asked me for my password. Anyway, I was like, yeah, it was probably God telling me I shouldn't leave that comment. But anyway, it's very interesting, and we're going to see more and more of this happen. People are just waking up, and it's nice. It's a beautiful thing to see.
I guess.
And so, that is the definition of a buzzkill right there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Ooh, it's the sky's blue.
I have some fun news from Gitmo Nation, the lowlands. And I figured it out. This is why, even though, of course, it's never enough, we still get, you know, donations from the Netherlands. I think we get donations from countries that are really severely suppressed. And of course,
we haven't gotten any donations from the Netherlands for a couple
really?
Of weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Bastards.
I think the latest thing, the latest gossip about you
Has blown it all.
Is kind of screwing us.
Well, no, my ex-wife is out there telling everyone I'm broke. I got no money.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
I haven't noticed.
Yeah, so they should be sending us some dough.
She took all your money.
Yeah, so, of course, the Netherlands is a great beta test country, just like the United Kingdom. And so they've been talking about the black box, which is going to go into automobiles, which from time to time crops up here in the States as well. So, of course, we're miles behind Gitmo Nation East in this case. Whereas they're actually, in 2010, they're going to start putting GPS-based boxes in everybody's car so that they can charge you road tax in accordance to exactly how much you used your automobile and on what roads you drove. So there were some questions in the Parliament about this, of course, about the privacy issues. And the answers come out. It's like, well, of course, this information is all private unless the security of the state is at hand, or if we need to prevent or investigate some threat to the state. So not just investigation, should you be, for some reasons, suspect of some terrorist activity, but also for prevention of terrorist activity, which, of course, means they're going to be looking at your shit. And they'll be able to know exactly where you were at exactly what time, doing what. And as far as I can tell, this is just doop, 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 doop. Everyone's just kind of, you know, just kind of walking along.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
And I was like, okay. Hey, Adam Curry's the worst dressed man. Hey, everybody, did you see that? Idiots.
So you heard about the recovery.gov fiasco? and the cover up about it?
No. No, is that the big news you wanted to start the show with?
No. The big news was the Sarah Palin tour. Oh, okay. We're beyond the news. We can stop the show now.
Okay, good night. We'll see you on Sunday, everybody.
Yeah, okay, you didn't get this. You missed. How did this one go by?
Because I've been busy. You know what I've been doing? I've been on the road sucking advertiser dick, trying to get them to support Mevio.
Oh, well, then you missed this. Yes. So somebody just doing some casual research, they discovered that the actually it was the Heritage Foundation, I believe, and that was picked up by ABC and or CBS picked it up after that, and then we discovered it, took credit for it. Then it got on the right wing talk radio. The left wing talkers, of course, we always have our dichotomy here with the right and the left, and the left people have paid no attention to this, and they think, well, it's no big deal, it's a common mistake. So the recovery.org has all these, you know, here's how much money we save. And here's how many jobs were saved, and this and that and the other thing. And somebody noticed that these districts that they had, the Arizona districts and New Mexico, they don't exist. Non-existent.
they're not even on the website?
There's no district. I mean, it shows itself on the recovery.
Oh, wait. So this is districts that don't exist where they actually save jobs.
Yes, and money.
I love
and
it.
And their guys are like, and then you get the government response to this is, you know, apparently the site is filled with bogus information. Somebody even said, we have no idea where any of this stuff comes from. They're just making it up and putting it on there.
Yeah,
this
is our Vivek Kundra site. Is doing a great job.
$18 million, ladies and gentlemen, is what they've paid to put this website up. And it's useless garbage. And so I wonder, well, we didn't do it. We didn't think, we didn't know. It's just a common mistake. I don't know where the data came from. It's a database error. They come up with all these bogus excuses. And of course, the real thing is it's all phony. The whole thing's a fake. It's a fraud. Why don't you just shut down the site and give the taxpayers their $18 million back?
It's funny. You know, I was looking at the nightly news and no one mentioned this, John.
Oh, well, it's not that important.
No, of course not.
It's only $18 million down the drain.
Well, forget the $18 million. It's all part of the bogus reporting that the government does, just like the unemployment rate, which is now above 10%. But, of course, that doesn't include, as we call them, the bums.
The bums.
The disenfranchised, the disenchanted, the weak, and the bums. So we're much closer to, like, I don't know, 18, 19, maybe 20% in some cases.
Oh, yeah, there's got to be 20% at least in California.
It sure feels like 20%. And by the way, I'm out there sucking advertiser dick to stop that from happening in my own company.
Right.
Yeah, I can't wait.
You're getting those crow's feet around the lips there, by the way.
Yeah, I'm walking a little.
Use some
little
cream.
All right. Too much information there. Something else I didn't see on the news, which I had to read in Gitmo Nation East publication Le Telegraphe from the UK. A Boeing 747 transporting cocaine crashed in Africa. So,
on a 747 was it filled with cocaine?
Yes, a 747. And this is according to the UNODC, the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So it actually landed in West Africa on a small strip, relatively small strip, obviously, in an emergency. But then it was taking. See the way. Well, I'll get to how it works. Then it took off and it crashed upon takeoff, carrying at least 10 tons of cocaine. 10 tons. Now, according to the UNODC, the opium. Now, I don't understand how in this article they're talking about cocaine and then go back to opium.
Yeah.
But okay. So according to the UNODC, the opium comes from, quote, Nigerian groups based in Pakistan. So here's how it works as far as
Sounds more like an opium and somebody mixed up the...
Yeah, the cocaine.
To screw up the search engine so you can't find this story.
Yeah, oh.
So it probably was opium or heroin.
It was probably heroin. That's what I'm thinking as well.
Makes more sense.
So what happens is, of course, the shit's grown in Afghanistan, protected by the troops. It's then transported to Pakistan, which, by the way, we're in. Then it's taken out of Pakistan for processing in South America, and then from South America it's flown into the United States. Of course, no information about markings on the plane. I can't find any more stories about this. In fact, you know what? I'm doing a save page as we speak. I should have done that.
Yes,
before.
We want to remind everybody out there, when you run into really good stories like this,
save page.
You're not seeing in the mainstream media, always don't bookmark them. Save page as, and then you put it under web page complete, and you should probably have just a folder filled with these things.
Filled
and that way,
junk,
when you go back to look at it, you bookmark it too. But then you go back to look at it, and it's gone, which it will be.
This will be gone. This will be gone.
That will be gone, but you have a copy.
But you think that a 747 filled with heroin crashing would make some news somewhere.
Yeah, I would think. Right?
You know, but,
they'll catch like some guy with a baggie. They had a story up in Port Angeles about, oh, they got a guy with 2 ounces. You know, oh, front page, breaking news, stop the presses.
Oh, man. I wanted to.
Tons.
Yeah. Hey, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm going to cook a heirloom turkey.
Are you doing that upstate or in Washington or down here?
Down here, you want to come over?
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, John, because I'll be all alone.
Oh,
Mickey's well, Mickey's going to be in Holland.
She's not
and then
be
LA.
There?
No, she's.
Oh, well, then, let me think about it first.
Oh, you bastard. Oh, wait a minute. Here, don't look, John. Don't look. Here it comes. If anyone can give me a better sound effect for 2 to the head, I'd appreciate it because people are complaining. They don't like this one.
I could probably put one together, but it'd be a 45 or 44 magnum.
No, it's got to be a silencer.
That's what a silencer sounds like. They're silent. Wait, I got one. Here, I'm going to play this. This is a really good silencer, by the way. 2 to the head. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Didn't feel a thing.
There you go.
Speaking of Pakistan, and our producers have been... Hey, by the way, shit, John, stop, put on the brakes. Who's our executive producer?
Good stoppage. Okay.
I can't believe you...
This week's executive producer... No, I got
you
up
blew
early.
It. You blew it.
Well, we could have brought him in sooner. We'll just give him a little... And by the way, he deserves a big plug because he gave us $300.
Whoa!
Michael Menzies...
Michael
and
Menzies.
By the way, this show, most of the money came from Australia. Well, not most. Yeah, most of it came from Australia. This guy's in Eltham, North Victoria, Australia, and he gave us $300, no questions or anything that he didn't, you know, just threw it at us. And I'm thinking I was working on this earlier this week, kind of an Australian ditty that because Australia's got as much crap going on, if not more than we do.
It's Gitmo Nation really, down under. Oh, yeah. They got big trouble down there.
Yeah. So, and, Michael, thanks.
Yes, it's highly appreciated, Michael. And, of course, you can put that on your resume. You are the executive producer of No Agenda, episode 149. Please put his name on the Skype, John, right now, just so I can remember to put him at the top of the show notes, which I've been pretty good at. I've changed the format of the show notes. I'm spending a little more time. Even some of the stories we don't get to, I'm putting the links in there. And I want to thank, let me see. I don't know if I can find out who exactly did that. Well, one of our producers heard my call for audio of United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton when she was on her Far East tour, where she was fielding questions about the Moro Islamic Liberation Front in a town hall style gathering in Manila. Here it is.
And I'm encouraged by what I hear about the progress in the peace efforts that are going on between the government and MILF.
MILF.
One more time, Hillary.
And MILF.
Do you think she is so far removed from popular culture that she has never heard the term MILF?
Absolutely.
This is what's running your country.
Most people don't know. Please.
My 76-year-old aunt knows the term.
I'm thinking most people don't, and I'm sticking with that theory.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would she? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you're right. Good point.
So,
You had a couple more clips, John. Maybe you want to get to one of those.
Yeah, well, we talked about the Homeland Security guys a minute ago. I was listening to this guy, Garza, who is like an undersecretary for medical Homeland Security, something or other. It's a crazy title. You know, we've got millions of people working in the government with these titles, and all they do is give testimony now and again. And I was listening to this testimony. There's a couple of things. There's two or three things that struck me. This was off of a Senate hearing. One of them was that was a factoid that he threw in there that dropped my jaw, which you'll hear, and I'm sure you're going to notice it. And then it was also his quasi-military way of answering questions with these crazy kind of sentence constructs that are
he's programmed. He's totally programmed so that he can't mess up. Was this a Senate hearing, a congressional hearing?
I think it was Senate.
Okay. And by the way, this is what we do, ladies and gentlemen. We take the raw information. Like, what are those people called who are supposed to do that? Journalists. Yeah, that's right. We take the raw information. We interpret that for you, and we then actually give you the source material so you can make up your own decision and do a little bit of your own research. It's called, what is it called again, John?
I can't remember. It doesn't exist. It's something old and old fashioned.
You know how they get new words into the dictionary, like unfriend? This is a new thing, by the way. Unfriend is the new dictionary word they've added. So, but they take out words like journalist, journalism. They just take it out. Yeah. Put in words like Huffington.
An unfriend.
Unfriend.
Listen to this guy.
As I mentioned earlier, we have a dual mission where one complements the other. 80% of the Department of Homeland Security personnel are operational.
You're right. 80% of the U.S. Department of Personnel are operational. Blah, 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 blah. I will tell you everything I've been programmed to tell you.
And for comparison, this is roughly the size of the Marine Corps. OHA and DHS have moved aggressively to ensure that our forces are protected. We have widely disseminated evidence-based guidance to our employees and posted them on our internet sites.
Wait a minute. I got to hear that again. The hell is he talking about?
Go back to the beginning. He's talking about...
Should I go back to the very beginning?
Yeah, I think you should. Okay. He's talking about whether the Homeland Security people have enough flu vaccine, basically.
As I mentioned earlier, we have a dual mission where one complements the other. 80% of the Department of Homeland Security personnel are operational.
Okay, operational, what does that mean?
I have no idea.
Does that mean that they've been injected?
I have no, they're operational. They're just, that means they're...
Well, what's the other 20% doing?
They're obviously sitting on their butts doing nothing. I have no idea what this means. This is gobbledygook crap of bureaucraties. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
And for comparison, this is roughly the size of the Marine Corps. OHA and DHS have moved aggressively to ensure that our forces are protected. We have widely disseminated evidence-based guidance to our employees and posted them on our internet site.
Wow, evidence-based guidance. In other words...
What does that mean? Oh, it's the truth.
It means it's the truth. It means it's the truth. It's evidence-based. It's not just some crackpot theory we dreamed up. It's the truth. If anyone has a copy of this, and seeing as there's 80,000... was it 80,000?
No, 80%.
80%.
Roughly, he never gives any numbers, but he says this.
The size of the Marine Corps.
I thought you'd pick up
on. Yeah, no,
the size of the Marines.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
This is the Department of Homeland Security. And by the way, he uses to describe these Homeland Security folks, he describes them as forces.
Oh, totally.
So listen, our forces do this, our forces do that. I mean, so in other words, it's a quasi-military organization, and this guy sounds quasi-military.
It's not quasi, it's real. It's the real deal.
To our employees and posted them on our internet sites.
No, it's on the internet site, so we'll take a look there. Okay.
In addition, we spearheaded the acquisition, storage, and forward positioning of our protective measures, including PPE and antiviral medications.
What's PPE? What?
I have no idea. What's his forwarding? He makes it sound like he's on a mission in Afghanistan.
He is.
I mean, listen to this guy.
This is the way he views it, John. Of course. He's a Marine.
He's like a doctor.
He's like a Marine.
He sounds like a two-bit military crony that's not even made colonel yet.
Hey, you know,
trying to impress the bosses with his talk.
Yeah.
Of our protective measures, including PPE and antiviral medications. By performing the...
It's probably like, hey, it's probably like protective something. You know, it's like a ration unit.
Somebody in the chat.
These functions were helping ensure that the threat of the current pandemic will not influence the security posture.
Is he reading from a teleprompter? He stumbled over the words there.
That the threat of the current pandemic will not influence the security posture of this nation.
Security posture.
Posture. Posture.
Which in this case is bend over. Bohica.
Another, you know, stuff keeps popping up and I've had some time to process it. Of course, Uncle Don, my Uncle Don was, there was a funny quote somewhere. He read it to me, an old picture. We were looking at old pictures and it says, Donald P. Gregg, a civilian in the Pentagon. Which, of course, means CIA. He was even laughing about that. He's like, a civilian in the Pentagon. What is that supposed to mean? So I said, hey, man, what do you think about this extra layer the Obama administration has put above everybody, the FBI, the CIA, etc.? And he gave me a look. He said, the CIA is freaking out. They are so angry. And it was all, you know, they already had all this crap going on. He's like,
well, this has been your theory from the get-go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they are very, and so without saying they're very angry at the Obama administration, the look was enough. He said there's confusion, there's anger, there's dismay. And of course, you know, he's a CIA guy. So he's saying like, you know, well, you know, where's the, you know, where's the good things we did? I'm like, Don, please. What do you want? But yeah, this is
that's
all just
the good things we did. It's in the book, Legacy of Ashes.
We talked about that again as well. And I said, like, you know, so, you know, Legacy of Ashes, you know, when you told me, he said, how did you get into this? I said, well, you actually got me started, you know, after you wrote that, that New York Times piece about Legacy of Ashes. And then you told me that everything in the book was pretty much the way, you know, true, except of course they didn't put any of the good things in, the good things you did. And I said, well, you know, so there it goes. It just proves that for 20 years, we were afraid that Russia had all this great technology. And it turns out it was bull. And that the, you know, the CIA read it wrong, or perhaps there was counterintelligence that made us read it wrong. And, you know, we spent 20 years being afraid of nothing. Nothing, I tell you.
20?
30, maybe. How long?
Started in 1957. Or right, started so, when they dropped their first H-bomb.
Well, so, 30 years, I'm sorry. 30 years. 30 years. And by the way, a great point made by Mickey and Don is why, if you, Mickey lived in Japan, and of course Don has been in Korea, Japan, all over Asia, in multiple posts.
Has Mickey ever worked in the Pentagon?
Only as a civilian. And there's this war memorial in, I believe, Nagasaki.
You know, Mickey's just there to keep an eye on you, right?
Yeah, she hasn't been activated yet. She's part of the 20%. That hasn't been activated yet. Once she's activated, that's it. I'll make sure I record the sound effect for everybody.
Yeah, we can use it. I'll use it on the tribute show.
That's when I get the two to the head. But every world leader pretty much has been to the war memorial at Nagasaki, except a U.S. president. And wouldn't it be, particularly with Obama traveling around in Far East Asia and, you know, going to see all these leaders, wouldn't it be great if he went to the war memorial in Nagasaki? That would be a real diplomatic statement.
I suspect it's not our doing. I really doubt the Japanese government wants us to visit the thing because it would cause nothing but a headache for them in terms of protests and all this stuff.
No, I disagree. And only because Mickey lived there for 5 years and she lived amongst the people. Well, of course, she lived above the people.
Yeah, she's 6 foot five and they're all like, you know, 4 foot two.
But that is something that is sorely, sorely, sorely missed is a visit from a real U.S. honest to God president.
Well, then you got to wait.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay. So a couple of things. Well, I got the. I guess I crossed them off. Never mind.
Anyway, so John, once again, I appreciate you listening to C-SPAN for countless hours to pick up that little ditty. And once I quit my day job, I too will be able to have more clips of this ilk. I mean, some people just have more time while they're basting their meat than others. I'm basting meat of a different sort.
I don't want to know.
But this is what we do on No Agenda, and this is why we have people who are executive producers who give us money to keep us going, because why should we do it for free? And honestly, I'm getting a bit discouraged I was hoping we would, you know, eventually, I thought we were on a little uptick there for the while, and I thought we would get to a third show a week, which is really my dream. I would really like to just do this full time. But we need more donations. And I can't say it often enough. If every single person who listens to this show, even if you did $5 a year, of course you have to do $5 a month just to make up for the leeches, we would be doing this show full time.
Well, I've got a little clip here that I want to play in before we start asking or mentioning the people who did give this week. This is the I was watching this. I went, oh my God, and I just had to clip the whole thing, and it's a long clip. But this is the end. This is the clip you'll see there. It's long, and you can interrupt it if you want to, but it's just like a jaw dropper. This is, we're talking about, this show that we do is basically like public radio on the internet, but without being connected to anybody, you know, that's commercial.
There's no underwriting or funding, or as they call it themselves, commercials from General Electric, Archer Daniel Midland Corporation, from Boeing. And by the way, when you see those commercials on public television, ask yourself why. They're not selling you a product. They're not telling you, oh, you should be flying in Boeing planes with GE engines. No, that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because that way, they are touting the fact that they have influence over what you're about to see. They are actually laughing in your face like, ha, 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 ha.
And the joke of it is, of course, is that they're begging for money from the public, and the public gives them money.
Yeah.
A lot more than they give us. This is the end. This clip is the end of the McNeil Lair. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's News Hour.
The News Hour, which is brought to you by ADM, Boeing, and GE.
This is the end with the credits for this particular show, and there's even a moment where they run out of time to plug in stuff.
We have
and
to they stop just show a the list. Plugs are coming. Oh, jeez. All right.
Play it.
Gitmo Nation News, brought to you by...
And we'll see you online and again here tomorrow evening. I'm Jim Lehrer. Thank you and good night.
Major funding for the News Hour with Jim Lehrer is provided by...
What the world needs now is energy. The energy to get the economy humming again. The energy to tackle challenges like climate change. What if that energy came from an energy company?
I just got to stop this. So whatever the hell this comes, I think it's BP. So
no.
But they're actually telling you that there will never be a negative story about climate or an alternative story to climate change in the program you just watched, because these guys are paying for it.
Energy to tackle challenges like climate change. What if that energy came from an energy company? Every day, Chevron invests $62 million in people, in ideas.
People.
Seeking, teaching, building.
Fueling
growth around the world to move us all ahead. This is the power of human energy.
Sounds like a drug commercial.
Supporting math and science education for tomorrow's innovators. And by Wells Fargo Advisors.
Ah, there's the money, guys.
Together we'll go far. BNSF Railway. And by Toyota.
Oh, yes. No bad stories about Japan for you.
And Monsanto.
Hey! Wait a minute. How come they don't do the jingle? We got to send them the jingle, John. This is totally ridiculous. Oh, I can't believe that they
don't. Monsanto.
There we go.
And by Grant Thornton.
That's Grant Thornton's also the money guys, right? They're accountants, right? They're the ones that cook.
I don't know who they are.
Grant Thornton are accountants. They cook the books.
And by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah, hand in hand with Monsanto for the seed bank.
Dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life.
Is that what they're dedicated to?
Apparently that's their new buzz phrase.
And with the ongoing support of these institutions and foundations.
There's a huge list.
Okay.
There's more.
This program was made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And by
what's the Indian music
to your PBS station from viewers like you.
Oh, and by the way, thank you too, slaves.
Yeah.
So let me just play that clip one more time of the chairwoman of public Broadcasting.
NPR.
National Public Radio, which some call the National Treasure.
It's a national treasure.
Treasure. And this
the
is
national
how...
National Treasure. That was Janine Garofalo saying that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A national treasure. I love it so much. But who is influencing your national treasure? It couldn't be advertisers now, could it?
Okay, moving on to money. How are NPR's corporate underwriting revenues holding up in the recession?
Well, Monsanto's really not giving us enough anymore.
And what about foundation grants?
Two different stories. Underwriting is down. It's down for everybody. I mean, this is the area that is most down for us. Is in sponsorship, underwriting, advertising. Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, let's just call it advertising.
Call it whatever you want.
Let's just call it advertising, shall we? That would just be the proper name for it. So anyway, and by the way, I love the chat room. They're always laughing about this. They're like, but you guys actually play the commercials.
Like, I know. We do.
You don't want ads, but yet you, well, we're not getting paid for it.
Yeah, we're getting nothing.
Yeah, Bupkis.
We're bitter.
Yeah. So if you want to keep this alive, and by the way, we've got some heat going on with this thing. We're nominated for 2 podcast awards.
Yeah, we could win one of them or both. Well, so let's go over some guys that gave us some money this week.
Yeah, please.
And some women. We have another.
I would like to point out that my sister Willow, who is a leech and has not donated, she says, look, shut up. At least I keep your female listener count up. I had to give that one to her.
Ah, good point.
Okay.
Good point, Willow.
So we now have about 25 female listeners to the show?
We're moving along. There's a lot of them that have donated small amounts of money, and they don't get mentioned. So I think we're probably closer to 30. Nice. But we got William Arcand, who's given before us in Draycott, Massachusetts, and he's on the Knights program. He gave $137. Other night program people we're going to keep mentioning them, but it's Ricky Pierce and John Petrocini and Lari Korpi. That's Larickorpi, the Finnish person.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the bad news of this week. The bad news is, and by the way, people, if you have some extra money in your PayPal account and you want to cancel it, PayPal account, just give it to us and then close it.
Yeah, a couple of people have done that. Usually it's only pennies, but at least
it's just not much. 96 cents went from one guy.
Yeah, but I appreciate it.
Sterling Ellsworth, our perpetual $77.77 donor, unfortunately this week gave $7.77 with a note. He said Obama's recession is killing him. This is the best he can do.
Well, first of all, it is highly appreciated, regardless of what you give to the show. And secondly, we just heard donations, advertising, whatever you want to call it. It's down for everybody. It's down for everybody. These are hard times, my friend. But you know what? At least he'll drink one Starbucks coffee less and give it to us, because that's really what we're talking about here.
Well, he's a great guy. Mike Potter of Curb Appeal Concrete's looking for a government contract, Lake St. Louis, Missouri, 5555, which is nice. Then we had a bunch of $50 contributors, Brant Eddie in Olympia, Washington, Christopher Poda in, I guess it's Vinton, Virginia, out in the middle of nowhere, and good for him. Anyway, from Virginia. And then we got an odd contribution, Luca Capodoro. Coppadoro.
Where's Luca from?
Milano, Italy.
Ah, buongiorno, pronto, Luca.
He said that that clip you played of that guy saying it's going to be a new world government, new world order.
Complete
remember that
your collection of
week?
Award-winning
oops,
Australian
oops,
films on DVD
this
weekend.
Stop. Sorry, I opened a web page and it
blasted. God.
What? Autoplay.
Luca says that the New World Order clip you played last week was enough to convince him to donate.
Oh, I've got another one then from Henry Kissinger on Charlie Rose. We can play that.
I saw that too. Okay, let me finish this off. He gave us 113 euros, 113 euros. He says 113 is the emergency number. It's like 911
in
the
USA.
Yeah,
correct.
So
nice.
You punch in 113. So this is a helpline.
Yeah,
but it came in because he donated 113. Euros. It came in. This is the sad state of affairs in the United States.
Let me guess. It came in as $160?
$168.
Oh, my goodness.
$46.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. Thank you very much. That's a beautiful amount and a very symbolic amount, and that is highly appreciated.
Yeah, that was outstanding. Blue Beyond Blue Concepts in Northwest New South Wales, Australia, $86.99. And Joshua Davidow in Mesquite, of all places, Mesquite, Nevada, gave us $149, which was second only to our friend, our new friend Michael Menzies from Eltham, North Victoria, Australia.
Who came in with $300.
So that's all we had this week. It's not that much, but we had a lot of small donors, though. I have to say, I want to thank them all. Yeah. Lots of tens and 96 cents, and the guys closing out their PayPal accounts.
I got to tell you that I do believe in this model. I really do. And I'm coming up with an essay that I'm going to write, which I think is going to be, you know, the working title is Advertising is Dead. Which, of course, it really is, the type of advertising that we're used to. And don't you remember there was this whole theme for a while that everyone was saying, well, you know, disruptive advertising won't last. We kind of slipped away from that. And, you know, we've got all this disruptive advertising that's everywhere, and people are just ignoring it. I don't think a lot of it works. You know, some of it must. But, you know, I was watching V with Mickey, so we had a V-a-thon. Because, of course, we were in New York. Actually, I was in Chicago. We were on the road. So we had recorded last week's V. And then, of course, Tuesday when we came back, the new V was up. So we're like, okay, two episodes back to back. And we've got it on the DVR, which means we can skip through the commercials. Now, normally that's about five clicks, which is about 2.5 minutes. So it's 30 seconds per click on the fast forward. The Dish Network has that lovely feature still enabled, which I think was disabled on most TiVos. And it's unfucking watchable. It's unwatchable. The second you get into it, boom, commercial, click, click, click. And of course, you it's not five clicks; it's eight clicks.
Yeah, no, sometimes
it's 4 minutes
seven
of commercials.
Yeah, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, and then you see the promos, so you get pulled out of it, and of course, and you pointed this out on Cranky Geeks the other day, I think. When there's an Apple ad, you stop. It's like, oh, I haven't seen this Apple ad yet. Let me look at that one. And then you continue. It's unwatchable. You were so right, John. We got through the last week's episode, and then we got through, I'd say, 10 minutes of this week's episode, and we gave up. That's it. We're done. We can't. It's unwatchable. And it's not necessarily the dumb story or the childish way that the plot is fed into you because, of course, you're a fucking moron. And the only reason why we're showing you this is to make sure you're ready for all the ads that are coming to feed you with stuff. It's unwatchable. It's just unwatchable with all the commercials.
It's like, I find the same thing with talk radio in the morning. I mean, you listen to these guys, it's the same formula, you know, 2 to 1, 2 minutes of content for 1 minute of commercials. And they string out these advertisements for vitamins. But the problem is with the radio, you can't skip ahead.
You can't fast forward. So, no, of course not.
So what you do is what everybody else does, you start punching the button to get to the other channels. I have, like, for in the morning, there's like a sports talk and a news channel.
Which, by the way, when I was in New York, we had lights. We had four different lights in the studio, and those lights would light up when one of the competition was in commercials. So we know if this was WHTZ, Hot Rock and Z100, surfing the universe from the top of the Empire State Building, everybody. And so when WPLJ 95.5, when they were in commercials, we would basically immediately go to the biggest hit possible and put that into rotation because when people are zapping around during the commercials, you want them to hammer on to the big hit that they're waiting for.
So
this is all programmed. Now, before we, let's just move off of this. Let me just play a small piece of, and this is for our friend who donated 113 euros from Italy. This is Henry Kissinger. From Milano, no less. Henry Kissinger talking about President Obama's trip to China. This is from November 16th, just a little bit of the audio. Listen to what he has to say.
Nuclear problem in Iran. We have, of course, the whole array of problems, each of it, Afghanistan and so forth. But then we have the financial issues. But they really are issues of the construction of a new world order. That's what this is about. And that's the sort of dialogue the Chinese are generally good at.
There you go. So our president is in China.
Give me that clip and So I'm going to have to, you know, I think I could get that frog out of his throat, you know, by punching up the.
We need to put him on your Skype in Port Angeles so we can kind of spin that up a little. So what he says is this is basically the construction of a new world order. And this is why Obama is bowing before all of these Far Eastern Asian leaders, because he's bowing to them because they own our ass. Own it.
By the way, for people who want to donate, don't forget you go to noagendashow.com or dvorak.org/NA and help us out for Sunday so we can get our numbers up, because they're actually pretty weak this week.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Disappointing. So there's, I have a couple of aviation-related stories I wanted to hit real quick, but also there was something about China.
Oh, by the way, before we go off the topic, I do want to mention one thing. I want to give people some, because you guys got enough money.
Oh, wait, we have to do the jingle. Hold on.
Thou shalt donate at dvorak.org/NA.
Yeah.
That's
right. And that'll put people to sleep. So we're going to, I want to mention, you know, a primetime TV show, which runs, let's say, an hour, the way they're budgeted is based on the number of people that watch. Essentially, the viewers are valued at $1 per show per viewer. Huh. And so if they have 10 million viewers, they have usually an income of $10 million per show, and then they can budget based on that. So they'll budget a couple million dollars to produce, like, you know, some CIS show, for example. I think it probably goes out for $2 million or more. And then they have to divide up the rest of it amongst the networks and everybody in between. But it's a buck. If we take a look at our audience of 100,000 people, we do an hour and a half twice a week. So we do 3 hours of programming, which is may or may not be considered prime time because it's available to anybody. Technically, to really make it look as good as it would with a commercial operation, we should be bringing in, with 100,000 listeners, probably $100,000 to $200,000. We're bringing in 1,000. We're bringing in 1/100th of what we should be getting if we were a commercial operation that was actually pumping out, you know, 2 minutes of content and 1 minute of advertising.
Yeah, we'd be rich.
I just want to mention
that
to people.
We would be
rich. We'd be rich, but we're not. So I'm just mentioning to people that if you look at things in perspective, we could use more money. That's the point. So don't feel bad. Don't send us nasty notes. You guys should be working for free.
Yeah, blow me.
Which we do get at least once a week.
Some, yeah, there's always some. That's what podcasting is all about, dude. No, that's not what it's about. We're doing actual work. I'm following a Chinese blog. Tell me, you know,
have you learned Chinese yet, Adam?
No, but luckily this guy Benjamin Fulford, and I'll put his link in the show notes. By the way, another fine service we provide you for free. he translates it, and this is so I'm just hooking back into Kissinger with his New World Order and Obama, you know, sucking up to him over there. So China, the title of it is China Quietly Introduces New Financial System, which is, you know, marginally interesting. Of course, we know that that there is a new you know, there's a real push for a new reserve currency. And here's what I thought was interesting. China is purchasing 10,000 tons of gold to back up a new fund designed to develop and market heretofore forbidden and suppressed technologies. The fund will be based outside of China and will be controlled by prominent members of the Chinese overseas community. Now, here's the thing that blew me away. The gold purchase will take some time because of the logistics transporting it, and the Chinese wish to test it thoroughly because both the Chinese government and MI6 now confirm reports that much of the gold sold by the Federal Reserve Board over the past decade is in fact gold-plated tungsten.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a story that wasn't covered by the mainstream media. I did see it. And apparently, I don't even know if it's gold plated. I think they kind of dipped the tungsten
into it. Spray painted it with like Christmas tree paint.
No, I think there's actually enough gold on the outside. If you scrape it, you scrape off some gold. But
wait, you're telling me that the Federal Reserve is?
I don't know that part of the story is true, but I understand there's a lot of tungsten out there that is being sold as gold because it has essentially the same weight.
Same weight, exactly. So this is, you know, this is very, very frightening. And of course, now I'm starting to understand why the Federal Reserve doesn't actually want to be audited. May I just remind you that there's no one who has gone on record and has actually seen the gold that is supposed to be in the vaults of the Federal Reserve. You're not allowed in there. That's our gold. That's our American, United States of America citizens'
gold. And wasn't a bunch of these vaults underneath the Twin Towers? And there's like, do you remember the stories that came out initially about the missing gold at the Twin Tower? And that story's never resurfaced?
No, why would it? Why would it? We're way too busy nominating and awarding Adam Curry with the Worst Dressed Man of the Year Award and other Taylor Swift related stories. That's what the media assassination is all about. And I forgot to tell you that, in case you hadn't noticed, we have a formula.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
And we can't do it without your donations. We really can't. And I would like to do a hell of a lot more, and boy, would we be good. Particularly if we could get to a third show, which I really want to do.
Yeah, you just have that third show on your craw.
I do. Okay, two aviation-related stories. The first one is from a week and a half ago. Reports of airplanes spraying mysterious substance over Ukraine days before pneumonic plague outbreak. Now, of course, I've been harping from time to time on the so-called chemtrails, which are real, which are admitted.
No.
The government admits that they have done
nobody
many atmospheric.
Admits to anything I can, about
all right,
this.
Then I'll have to put the documents in the show notes. Give me a couple days because I can't quit my day job just yet, but I will do it. Five sources confirm this. Local newspapers of Kiev also received hundreds of phone calls from residents and business owners close to the area the planes were spraying the suspicious substance. But not only that, but local businesses and retailers were advised to stay indoors during that day by local authorities.
Well, I'd like to see some documentation for this. In other words, some of the advisory notices or something like that. My understanding was they were seeding the clouds.
Yeah, with a virus from Baxter International, which is located right there in Ukraine.
A virus cannot... If you dropped a virus at that altitude, it's not going to be alive by the time
it
comes.
What altitude, John? You think this is like 40,000 feet? No, this is they're doing this at a couple thousand feet.
It's like a crop duster flying over.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I see it all the time in San Francisco, by the way. All the time.
Oh, please. I've never seen it once. How
okay,
do you see
all right,
it all the
well,
time?
Let me. So you think I'm crazy, right? And yes, I will point out to you when it happens again. And I can show you pictures of the planes at local airports with all the spray devices on them. Be happy to do that.
Yeah, they're called crop dusters. They go up to the Napa Valley.
It's a Learjet, John. It's a Learjet with this shit on it. It's not a crop. It's not like a biplane. So remember,
okay, you take a picture of the Learjet with this shit on it.
I will. I've got the pictures. I've got the pictures.
You say that.
I have the pictures from Tony, who drives me from time to time. And Tony has also driven some black hats up to, what's the black hat airport? I'll come up with it.
I don't know.
Anyway, he saw one of these planes and he took pictures of it. So I'll get those posted. But just to kind of...
Did it say Baxter International on the tail?
Yeah.
Get the tail number and look it up. You can look it up by tail number. See what this guy's flying around.
Okay, good point. I shall do that. Remember the Qantas jet that took those plunges on its way from Perth from Singapore in October last year? Remember, it was like a big thing, and they said it was, it had to be maintenance, and everyone was, and it was, we even discussed that as a possible problem, that because the maintenance was done in Mexico, or some bullshit like that. And of course, I had some crackpot theory about it. Well, I would lie now like just to read you from the official second interim report from air safety investigators into what happened to flight QF-72, which left one flight attendant and 11 passengers with serious injuries. There is a constant stream of high-energy galactic and solar radiation interacting with the Earth's upper atmosphere, the report notes. This interaction creates a cascade of secondary particles. Some of the secondary particles, in particular neutrons, can affect aircraft avionics systems. Of course, this was an Airbus, which is highly automated, highly systemated, I think running Windows NT, actually. And this, of course, happened in the Southern Hemisphere. And this continues to happen to aircraft that are in the Southern Hemisphere. And no one's copping to the fact that there is some major shit going on with actually solar storms, not sun... not solar. It is solar. Yeah, the solar magnetic storms. And it is affecting aircraft avionics. And now they're reporting on it. So when you laugh at me for these things...
And I didn't laugh. I was in a total agreement with this theory.
No, you were talking about the maintenance in Mexico. That was your side.
No, whatever. It was both valid.
So stay away from those Airbuses, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, the Airbus in the... Well, don't fly an Airbus in the Southern Hemisphere, I guess,
correct,
for sure.
Correct. Bad idea.
So that's interesting. So that's an official report.
Yes,
it's not something from Prison Planet.
No, I have the PDF, which I'll also put in the... I got to presume the PDF is official. It looks pretty official.
Yeah, well, it probably is. Nobody bothers with that sort of hoax.
You know why? It's because no one's reporting on it. It's not big enough. I mean, if you're going to make a hoax, then you want something that a lot of people are going to talk about. Like, let me see. Oh, airplanes flying into towers and then the jet fuel melting them. Yeah, that's a good one. Before I forget, H.R. 1207, which, of course, is Ron Paul's End the Fed bill, is now trying to be, is about to be watered down by Mel Watt, Representative Mel Watt. And essentially, the whole bill is just going to be a piece of crap.
Oh, what do you, and we didn't see this coming down Broadway?
Yeah,
we knew this was going to happen. Of course, we
knew it was going to happen, but it's one step closer, so we've got to keep fighting.
It's not a step closer.
Well, people will eventually figure it out. You know that guy, Blunkfein, the CEO of...
tell you about the lines for the swine flu vaccine over here in Albany?
Yeah, you did last week, on the last show.
Yeah, that's people figuring things out.
You're right. Lord Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, after in the Financial Times, which we reported on, after he said, we're doing God's work, which of course, it was just a joke. And because everyone got really pissed off about it and it started to catch some fire, they had to do some damage control. And now they're like, we're coming out with a $500 million fund to invest in small businesses. Please. Invest in small businesses, you bastards. Lion bastards. Nah, no way.
So while you're reading that book, what's the book I got here?
Do you want to hit the swine flu minute or
you have swine flu stuff? Because I'm really don't have much.
Yeah, I got a little bit. No agenda, swine flu minute. I know you can't help yourself, but you're just humming that in the shower. It's a you know, this is Jeff Smith. He makes hits so big. And you just, it's the no agenda swine flu minute. Yeah, so actually I was kind of leading into it with the mysterious substance that was sprayed over Ukraine. Oh, by the way, breaking news, Tony Blair has apparently dropped out of the race to become the first president of the Europe.
I wonder who his, who the overlords were that made this decision.
Yeah, someone definitely...
kind of screws up our basic theories.
It does. Well, it's not over yet. Coming to you from Ireland, Gitmo Nation East, the Irish government plans to introduce compulsory swine flu vaccinations and is preparing to jail people if they refuse to take the jab, as they call it over there in the East. The Irish Daily Sunday Star reported that the Irish Health Department is planning to activate provisions in the 1947 Health Act to enforce mandatory swine flu vaccinations. Baxter, a company currently under investigation by the Austrian police for deliberately contaminating 72 kilos of vaccine material with the live bird flu virus in February, is going to be supplying Ireland with the swine flu vaccines. I'd say, tip of the hat, tipperity! You guys are screwed. What's screwed in Irish?
Well, that could be. I mean, if they're going to, you know, the idea of mixing these viruses in the same vial is to maybe they can come up with some new one that come out of it that they can crank up the pandemic that actually does kill people.
Yeah, but then to actually make it mandatory. I mean, if it's mandatory in Ireland, It is now the United States of Europe. It'll be mandatory all across. And by the way, in the Lisbon Treaty, which I read for you, yes, I took the time to read the whole thing. In the Lisbon Treaty, it literally says that they can mandate things like vaccines if there's an imminent threat to the nation or the states. Which, of course, this is because the World Health Organization has deemed this to be a pandemic level 6 under the rules which they changed just before all of this broke, conveniently. So anyone in Gitmo states of Europe can expect to have forced vaccinations. Meanwhile, back home in Gitmo Nation Midwest, Minneapolis, Hennepin County Library say plush toys and hand puppets will no longer be available for checkout or play because of swine flu concerns.
Hmm. I'm glad they're being extra cautious.
This is going a little bit too far.
Well, it's like the guy, the idiot coach, that says no more high fives from the football players.
Yeah, but that's not how you're going to get swine flu, from putting your hand in a hand puppet. And by the way, it's a disgusting thought anyway. You know, if I was at the library, I wouldn't let my kid just stick their hand up. Maybe you can stick your hand up there, but you'd wash it after that, you know?
Mommy, like somebody put a turd in this one.
There's all kinds of crap in there.
I have a great gag. I mean, you these high school kids. You see those little kids? Let's put
poop in there. And now, of course, in Gitmo Nation East, the under-fivers will be offered the swine flu vaccine. I don't get it. They keep touting everywhere that the CDC has said that pregnant women and children under 5 are at high risk. Yet all the vaccine inserts say that, you know, you need to really be careful if you're pregnant or under 5 before taking the vaccine. I don't understand.
I know. All this information, anyone born after 1956, the likelihood of getting it is zero. They don't need the shot. Oh, older people should have the shot. I mean, this is like all the information is contradictory. It's all over the map. There's no one source of good information. Now, it's a scam.
And by the way, you and I talked to a couple of the kids who came in the other day at the Mevio office, Amanda and some girlfriend she was with. These kids are what, 22, 23? And, they're, of course, they buy into global warming and they're very afraid of it. And I said, no, don't worry about it. You're not going to die unless you take the swine flu shot. She said, no, we're not taking the swine flu shot. Everybody we know who takes that shot got sick. Duh. You're shooting a virus into somebody. Of course you're going to get sick.
Well, you're always shooting a virus into somebody with these shots. You don't always get sick from a flu shot, but why is everyone getting sick from this one?
Yeah, well, very good question. And I would like to remind everybody, all you have to do is go to GlaxoSmithKline.com, go download the PowerPoint from the CEO when he's presenting it. Not the annual report PowerPoint, but the one where he's showing off, like at the conference. You know, they're always going to some conferences and they're showing off what they can do, like financial conferences. I think it's like the Goldman Sachs swine flu conference. And you look at it and it's like, we're so proud. Our pipeline is huge. Vaccines are it. This is going to be great. Front page of the Financial Times last week. Front page. The nicotine vaccine, it's on its way. I mean,
is this a vaccine? It's not a vaccine.
It's an inhibitor.
By definition, it's not a vaccine because the nicotine addiction is not technically a disease. It's not caused by a vector. Somebody gets bit by a mosquito and then they have to have a smoke? Hey!
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel. But what it does is, it's not a vaccine. It actually... It poisons you. Yeah, it attaches itself to some microglobulin in your bloodstream.
We just lost two listeners because there's that one guy, right? You know, Adam mispronounces words.
Microglobulin. And it makes it bigger so it actually can't get into the brain receptors. I mean, this is messing with your bloodstream.
I don't like the idea.
No, but there's going to be a lot. There's going to be...
if you don't want to smoke... Just stop. Yeah. Oh, it says easy for you to say, Dvorak.
There's going to be but it's front page of the fine. Wait, hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it.
Probably people live longer smoking than they would taking these kinds of medications.
Yeah, I think I threw it out, unfortunately. But it was the front page, and you know they had all these statistics. This is the Financial Times, by the way, which you know now I'm losing respect for them as well. And it's like, well, statistics show that of all people who quit smoking, you know, 80% start again. And, you know, what we really need this vaccine is going to be great. And you're right. By definition, it is not a vaccine. But there's going to be a shot so your kid won't get fat. That, you know what? Here's what I predict. In our lifetime, during this show, if we ever get enough money to continue, during this show, there'll be an anti-gay vaccine. I guarantee you someone's going to come up with it. This is how crazy this is going to become. If you want your kid not to be gay, take this shot. It'll be fine. I guarantee you.
You know, that's sick, but you're probably right.
And of course it's sick.
The fact of the matter is what they've done here is they've promoted the use of the term vaccine, and they've, you know, and then all the, you know, all the stories about the swine flu and how we're handling it, and everyone's getting their shots, and there's lines around the corner, and everybody's all, you know, jacked up about the idea of vaccine's going to save us. So you equate vaccinations with good things that could save you. I mean, they could be shooting people with swine flu vaccine. For all we know, it could be just water.
So the FDA is very close to approving this nicotine vaccine. And I would like to read from the dictionary. Vaccine is, quote, a substance used to stimulate the production of antibodies and provide immunity against one or several diseases prepared from the causative agent of a disease. So you're right. By definition, this is not a vaccine. And if the FDA actually approves it under the wording vaccine, well, then you know that Peggy, who was in charge of the FDA, is a complete frickin' shill.
Absolutely.
Boy, let's close it out. Hold on a second.
It's the No Agenda Swine Flu Minute.
We're on it for you. And don't let them trick you with this, ooh, there's not enough. Ooh, we don't have enough. Go stand in line. You're in a higher
risk
group.
That's the Nintendo marketing theory.
Totally, and it's working.
Yeah.
And I would like to mention one more thing. So I guess Breitbart.com or Big Hollywood or whatever that Breitbart dude does, all of a sudden the internets are all a light about, oh, they use Law and Order to promote the healthcare agenda. Okay. How long ago did we start on this? How long ago did we identify it? How often have we been playing?
We've been doing it for over a year, I believe.
We've been playing you clips from CIS, Law and Order, CSI. Oh, another thing about CSI.
So CSI, not CIS.
Yeah, we had a burglary at the offices. Downstairs in the basement, we have two studios, and one studio was broken into. Clearly by someone who wanted to, you know, probably a drug addict, because they took three cameras. They left a lot of really expensive shit there, but it was just, you know, not the stuff you can sell on the street. And a high, you know, HD camera you can get rid of quick, right? You know, 100, maybe $200 or something. So it's very clear that this is someone who just knew what they were doing, had to get a quick fix, and it sucks because you feel violated. And we almost couldn't do Cranky Geeks because of it. So anyway, the cops come in. And you know, they come in with their dusting kit, which is, kind of looks like, remember when we were kids, John, and for Christmas you get like a medical kit, you could play doctor?
Yeah.
One of those little plastic things. So that's essentially what they're carrying. The only thing's missing is not pink, so it could be the nurse kit. And they open it up and they're like, well, first of all, they say, where do you want us to dust? And we're like, well, how about the door they jammed open with a crowbar? Would that be a good place to start? No, we can't lift prints from that. I'm like, what? Where's your blue light that you flip on?
Where's William Peterson?
Yeah, you just walk in.
They spray a little gas on it, and the prints come up out of a piece of, you know.
Bing, and we've got the DNA, and we cross-reference it, and we've got the fucker. Where's all that technology?
That's
You mean it's not true? It's bogus? Oh, you don't say. Bastards.
Yeah. They'll never catch the guys. They're not interested.
Just throwing back to the beginning of the show regarding Sarah Palin. I did catch some of what she said on Sean Hannity last night. And, of course, she carried across the meme beautifully, because regardless of whatever you think of her, she's programmed. She's a bot. And she's like, oh, yeah, this Fort Hood shooting, that was a total terrorist attack. You know, the meme that we predicted, John, she carried on. Oh, because of political incorrectness, she wasn't, you know, this guy should have been profiled. Oh, I'm going to get slammed by all the liberals tomorrow for saying profiling, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, the White House, of course, we know the guy was actually a patsy, and there's so much wrong with this story and so many
loose ends.
Well, we
can't get the story. That's the problem. Yeah. First, it was three guys, then it was one guy, then there was the woman shot him, then she didn't shoot him. It was some other guy, a black man, who actually took him down.
Meanwhile, he did all this with a handgun where he had to reload at least three or four times, according to the most recent story.
Yeah, well, you hear it was an M16, then you hear it was a handgun. How come there was lots of witnesses? They're told everyone to shut up, obviously.
Yeah, well, it gets better when it comes to witnesses, because the first public congressional hearing on the Fort Hood attack will not include testimony from any current federal law enforcement, military, or intelligence officials, because the Obama administration...
Oh, you mean, wait, you mean the people that were there to witness
it?
Yes.
The Obama administration has, quote, declined to provide any such witnesses. There will be no witnesses who were there. It's all going to be, well, you know, when it comes
to... Well, I'm sure this is a scandal, Adam. This must have been all over the news.
Again, I go back to my award for the worst-dressed man in the Netherlands.
Nothing to see here.
I'm not even going to play the jingle.
Don't play it much anymore.
Because it gets tiring. We could call the show Nothing to See Here. That's what we could do the entire time.
I love it. They're not going to have any witnesses that were actually at the event. And we still don't know who the civilian was. I think that's the key. One civilian out of the blue was killed. Probably worked at the Pentagon. A civilian at the Pentagon.
Now we know the code. This is the stuff you got to look for. Words matter. I am happy that... I guess it's Harry Reid's version of the healthcare bill has now been posted online. I guess now it's up to 2,500 pages. It's okay, because I'm going to read it for you. So here's my homework. I'm going to try and get done before Sunday, but it'll probably, before I have everything done, it'll be next week. Mickey's leaving on Monday for a week to Gitmo Nation East, and then she's got to be in L.A. for some work stuff. So I will have plenty of time. I will read through this bill. I will at least be able to address it with some, you know, I will do what even our elected officials are not doing, because you know they're not going to read it.
No, of course not. Why would they?
Staff for, and then a final link. This will be in the show notes from Nouriel Roubini, who is, of course, was a crackpot, a joke, laughable, a douche until he predicted the huge recession. Not only the timing, but exactly what would happen. He predicted it very accurately. Now he's seen as some form of oracle, and he. Published an article in the Daily News, and the headline is, "The worst is yet to come. Unemployed Americans should hunker down for more job losses." And he actually goes into the whole, the calculation of the disenchanted and the bums. And, you know, even if you look at the last recession, it still took a year and a half before the jobs came back. So he says, you know, you can't expect anything until probably about 2012. For anything to really be turning around, if it does. So have a read through that. That'll be some good homework for y'all. And please keep sending us suggestions for the Kim Jong-il care package, as we now have an in and can actually influence world politics by sending him DVDs, which may actually give him a different view of the world. So far, suggestions have been, of course, Team America, which he co-stars in. And Mean Girls is the most recent one, which I thought was an interesting suggestion. So we'd love to hear more suggestions.
Somebody suggested to me Dr. Strangelove would be ideal.
Ooh, that's a very good one. But maybe something with a positive message. Something that he'll actually get something.
Die Hard.
Die Hard. All right. Do you have anything else, John?
No, we're through. I'm done.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of things that I'm holding on to, and we'll bring up next on Sunday when we talk about Afghanistan again, which I'm sure we will.
Yeah, we have to because, you know, of course, we're getting real close to harvest.
I think is underway. I think they're gonna fall short because they never got their 40,000 helpers.
No, they're gonna get them in. They're gonna do something. Oh, by the way, Hillary Clinton had dinner with Karzai last night. That wasn't reported. She's over there in Afghanistan to congratulate him for winning the election.
Yeah. She's checking the quality of the material.
Yeah.
With a little spoon.
I wouldn't put it past her. All right, we'll have another service of the Church of No Agenda on Sunday morning. I guess we'll kind of be the regular time around 9 o'clock, Gitmo Nation West. So we'll be back on schedule. Coming to you from the Minimum Security Crackpot Command Center, where it's getting noisy in San Francisco, California, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where it's getting sunnier, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again on Sunday, right here on No Agenda.